She gazed at me in her last moments, and she whispered, "I stand before him above the world itself, and he speaks the truth. The desolation is near, the Everstorm, the night of sorrows." We know about the desolation. We know about the Everstorm, night of sorrows, I think. But there's a word in there that stood out to me now that would never have stood out to me 2 years ago, because now I know the title of this book. The death rattle says, "I stand before him above the world itself, and he speaks the truth." Could be very simple, could be any truth. But the title of our book is Wind and Truth. I wonder if that truth is going to be something we need to keep an eye out for.
Welcome back to Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 227, and it is our first episode to begin Wind and Truth by Brandon Sanderson. It has been a long time coming. We are finally here. Paul, how are you?
Fantastic. It feels kind of like coming home. Talking about Stormlight 5 this week, published Stormlight 5, and I could not be more excited. I'd also like to shout out, if you're watching on YouTube, you probably already noticed, we have a patron this week. So I'd like to go ahead and shout out, say thank you, big thank you to Celeste. Thank you. Celeste is an ardent and is supporting our podcast and is here right at the start of Stormlight 5. You may notice that Celeste is taped to my forehead rather than a mug this week. And honestly, that is because I have a mug which has the Skybreaker symbol on it. I actually made this myself.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of these now. This is actually my third one that I've made. And I tried to get the name to fit in the margins without covering the actual Skybreaker, or maybe do the backside, and I couldn't get it. It covered up something, so I was like, what if I just put this on my forehead? Or I think Trevor made that joke. So, Celeste, you are on my forehead for the episode. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you, Celeste. Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing excellent. We are back in the realm of Stormlight after, I think, nearly exactly 2 years since we finished Rhythm of War. And at the time, man, 2 years away from reading Stormlight seemed like a really long time. Thankfully, we had a lot of really good stuff to fill the gap for us to get us there with Mistborn and Secret Projects and the works. So it was a very enjoyable 2 years, but oh man, Paul said it. This is coming home. Wind and Truth. I'm ready. I'm so ready.
You said a lot of really good content filled the gap, but everybody also watched our tier list video last week, I assume. So you don't have to lie, Elliot.
There was a lot of really good stuff in there. We did throw a few things under the bus, and I apologize if our tier list has offended you and you've now unfollowed our podcast. I guess you're not listening if you've unfollowed our podcast from our tier list video. So yeah, I'm ready.
And Trevor, we were promised that we could make our grading criteria for that tier list video whatever we viewed whatever we wanted to do. So I'm assuming we would not be legally held accountable for that. So I'm going to go ahead and say that before I get utterly roasted.
There are some Well of Ascension apologists that are very upset based on that video.
I could believe it.
All right. We are going to bring back an old custom on this podcast for Stormlight episodes. Paul, do you have two words to briefly summarize these sets of chapters?
I do, Trevor. Thank you for asking. You haven't asked in a long time, so it's nice. Nice question to get. My two words summarizing, not really summarizing, the prologue in chapter one are foolish, Spren. Not together. Don't take that as foolish Spren, but foolish and Spren. The reason I chose those words are kind of independent. Foolish is in reference to Gavilar. I firmly believe Gavilar is one of the 10 fools that we've heard mentioned. We'll talk about it more. I believe he is one of the 10 fools. And everything that he encapsulates in the prologue is inaccurate, wrong, misled, misfounded, something. So very foolish indeed. And Spren, we're going to have a big conversation about Spren, just given our first chapter with Shallan's 2 Spren.
True. All right, Elliot, do you have 2 words for the episode?
I most certainly do. My 2 words for the prologue in chapter 1 of Wind and Truth are warm hugs. And just like coming home, I feel like stepping back into a Stormlight book is like getting a big warm hug from an old friend. And I can tie them into the chapters as well. I'll go backwards. So hugs is real simple. I actually focus my 2 words almost exclusively on chapter 1 because we've already analyzed the prologue a bit, and I do have a lot to say about it, but chapter 1 was the really new content for us since we'd kind of seen the prologue before. And in the Shallan part of that chapter, like Paul talked about with the Spren, there's a really tender scene with Shallan and both Pattern and Testament, in which Testament and Shallan share this really heartwarming hug and kind of moment where they're relating to each other a bit or something. And then warm is something that Kaladin says. And I was actually wondering if you guys had noticed the reference that he makes in that chapter to something that was a long time ago for us, but not so long ago for Kaladin. And yeah, we can talk more about it when we get there.
I did notice it. I realized while you were talking that I forgot to mention our spoiler scope for this podcast. So if you are joining us for the first time, which I imagine there are some, or if you are rejoining us after a while, we have, over the last 4.5 years, covered every published Cosmere work, except for White Sand. So we are not going to explicitly talk about other things not in Stormlight. However, they're not off the table. So if you have not read The Seeker Projects or Warbreaker or Elantris, we will explicitly talk about mechanics from those stories, maybe cameos from those stories. We're not going to shy away from them. So if you are afraid of spoilers for those stories, please go read those because those spoilers are included in this podcast. Just wanted to throw that out there before I forgot. Okay. Here we go. Prologue and chapter 1 of Wind and Truth. The prologue we actually covered 2 years ago. Did you guys spot any glaring differences to start between 2 years ago and today?
Okay, I think I spotted one. And I wanted to ask y'all, because I don't remember for sure. It's been a minute. I did re-listen to the early release one, but it's very possible that while I listened to Brandon reading it, that I was not 100% accurate in spotting differences. But Thaidakar appearing, was that different in this book? In what I remember of the early release reading was you just see the hooded orb or face, the hooded face. But in this, it says that Thaidakar lifted his hands like there was a body that was present. This isn't that foundationally different, but that was the case. And then it reverted into an orb, which Gavilar believes to be light weaving. Was that different, or did I just read that twice and think it was different?
I believe it is marginally different in description, but it is overall the same.
Yeah. Whenever I was reading it, it took a while to get to the part of then it reverted back into an orb. So I thought this was Brandon saying Thaidakar is physically here, actually on here. But then it changed, and I was like, nope, it's the same result. But he definitely led me to believe it for a second. Got my hopes up.
And it, yeah, I think it might be an editing thing of through the lens of Gavilar, this is what he's seeing. Because Gavilar, for a second, quite like genuinely believes that Thaydekar is here with him. And then the orb thing happens and he's really confused. So we can pause on that real quick. You guys were both quite confused about the mechanics of what was happening in this scene. 2 years later, have you learned anything?
This was way different 2 years later. And Trevor, you warned everybody about spoilers. We're going to get into a few of them right here already. Since then, we've read Elantris and person turning into shiny orb with a rune at the middle of it was really weird to Stormlight me 2 years ago. And very simply explained with a Sion in my current knowledge. And so this was immediately apparent that this is Thaydekar communicating with Gavilar through a Sion in a way that we saw multiple times in that story, where you can appear to others almost like a, you know, Star Wars hologram kind of thing and chat. And when the thing turns into a, like an orb with the rune at the middle, and that's classic Sion description right there.
Question for you. Is Elantris a prerequisite for Stormlight 5? Do you need to know that information to understand this scene?
I will say, as someone who has read the entirety of the prologue in Chapter 1, that Elantris is not yet a prerequisite for this book.
Okay.
If Thaydekar is going to make more appearances and we need to know later on more about like what Thaydekar is capable of or what he's doing, maybe it becomes that. To understand this prologue, no, I don't think so.
I do agree with Elliot, but I do want to say that these mentions that just leave you a little bit clueless, so he kind of plays it off by saying that must have been a light weaving thing. But as you've read this story, I feel like you know light weaving to work differently, and if you're light weaving something, it likely can't have a conscious conversation, you know, and sorts of things like that. Or there was a lot of area that made you believe this was definitely not light weaving, even if you haven't read Elantris and know this is a Sion specifically. That it, I don't think it's a prerequisite, because I think that is minor enough of a part. But I will say it adds to an air of not knowing what the heck is going on if you haven't read full Cosmere. Because it's pretty important to know who Thaydekar is, and which you don't need to know. It's okay that he's just Thaydekar and not, spoilers, Kelsier. But it's really good to know. And same with the Sions versus a light weaving aspect.
Yeah. So last time we covered this, we had three main discussions. The Stormfather, which we'll get to here in a second, Thaydekar, which we can land on now, and magic mechanics. You guys were fully confident, having read four full Stormlight books, and then you get the Stormlight 5 prologue and you're questioning everything. Our magic mechanics seem to be a little bit more nailed down. Let's talk about Thaydekar. Elliot, you now know who Thaydekar is, not just the Lord of Scars, in quote. So what are your thoughts on Kelsier meddling on Roshar?
Yeah, super, super big question. I actually thought that Thaydekar, having read this prologue before, even now knowing who Kelsier is, Thaydekar is actually one of the least interesting parts of this prologue for me, which seems weird to say. I'm more interested in the other aspects of it. But yes, we have Kelsier, leader of the Ghostbloods, messing around on Roshar. I'm very much thinking back to the Kelsier of the Lost Metal. This seems to be the not necessarily on a crusade Kelsier, and more of the running a Cosmere-wide organization for the betterment of Scadrial Kelsier. And I say that with a very big hesitancy question mark. What is his motive? What is he really out here for? Is it the same as what we've seen the Ghost Bloods on Roshar already do. Like, Mraes and crew, they seem to have a more economical motive. They're there for money, power, influence, get my investiture where I need it to go, kind of thing. Is that what Kelsier's at? Is he just an opportunist, a merchant, a businessman, or is there a bigger picture in here for him? That's my question.
I definitely want to chime in because I have a couple questions. So, okay, I'm going to do briefly refresh. So it's been a while since we've looked at Stormlight. I am actively rereading and catching up still while we're already reading book five. I remember a lot of what happens, but obviously a lot happens. So there's a lot to kind of clarify, make sure we're up to date. So Gavilar with Thydakar. Thydakar is asking for Rastaris. He wants Gavilar to essentially give him Rastaris.
Yep.
So I did not remember who Rastaris was off the top of my head. I had to kind of think back. Rastaris is Kallak.
Correct.
The Herald Kallak.
And do you remember where he is at the end of Rhythm of War?
Yes. So he was there with the whole Adolin Shallan in Shadesmar debacle.
Correct.
Situation. That's where we really got to know Kallak, I would say. This is where we first see, aside from the prelude, right? This is where we like see Kallak, right? But then we get to know him in Rhythm of War. Our characters have a bit of dialogue with him, maybe the most legitimate dialogue we've had with the Heralds thus far, like overall.
I'd buy that.
Including this prologue, we get a decent bit of coherent dialogue. And I've just been wondering, is this something that I've missed? Why does Kelsier want Rastaris? Why does he want Kallak? Do we know? Or is this still a bit of a mystery to us? Maybe this is something I've forgotten about.
You haven't missed anything. I don't know if we know why. I don't think we do.
Okay. So that is a big question, which I'm assuming will be circled back to at some point, either in interludes or something. I'm imagining we will see that. And I am very curious to know why Kallak, who, as time has gone on, our heralds have gone, in my head, from very large scale entities to, honestly, way more small scale in the scope of the Cosmere. I don't picture them becoming major Cosmere characters, but Kallak seems to have some kind of Cosmere footing because Thydakar is interested in him. So I feel like that kind of raises the stakes a little bit. So I've been very curious because I've kind of thought of our heralds as zoomed into the Stormlight story specifically.
Do you remember what Kallak's main goal is in Rhythm of War?
I don't. I remember the characteristics. I remember we kind of defined him as a bit of a coward, and he just seemed like a little bit of a weasel, like kind of a lawyer weasel.
So
is how I remember him, but I don't even remember why exactly.
As far as I remember, he's trying to run and hide from the Oath Pact. He's trying to get off Roshar if he can. So then throw that back to Thydakar. That might have direct implications for Kelsier. Of if Kallak can figure out how to get off Roshar, that might help Kelsier in what he's trying to do.
Because remember, they're both cognitive shadows. They're
correct.
Both dead and are, what's the term? Invested entities?
Stapled.
Yes, technical term, stapled.
Yeah.
They're both stapled souls. So, yeah, later on in this prologue, right, when Gavilar is talking with Rastaris, there's a few hints there because he even name drops, you know, hey, you know that Thydakar dude's looking for you. And the responses that Rastaris has is, oh, yeah, that man can't abide anyone having secrets. So I'm guessing, you know, secrets, haha. The one thing.
See, now you get the one.
Right? What I'm imagining is going on here is that Restares has done research, maybe 1,000 years worth of research on how to do things, how to travel the Cosmere, how to be functional as a cognitive shadow. And Kelsier's thinking, I need some of that information.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I'm stuck on a little something here that I have a big question of, which is, what is Shallan's goal with Restares as she works for the Ghostbloods? Like, things are getting kind of convoluted here. Shallan, yeah, in a roundabout way, works for Thaidakar. So,
well,
she
did until like the last two chapters, where she kind of declared war on Marais.
She's very much her own side. She's not right. beholden to the Ghostbloods, but in her espionage, she has a role in the Ghostbloods that she's working for. I'm doing my air quotes for those of you that aren't watching our YouTube video. In this chapter, in chapter one, actually, Shallan even says, "I'm here to kill Restares," which that was actually a little bit of an interesting bit there, because as far as I remember, back in Rhythm of War, the direction she got from Reyes was just find Restares and you'll know what to do.
Yeah.
Shallan seems to have jumped to the conclusion of, oh, that means kill him. But that's not what Thaidakar wants. In these chapters, when he's talking to Gavilar, he says specifically, hand him over to my agents. So is Mraes going off book with the assassinate Restares? Is Shallan jumping to conclusions and she's not supposed to be killing Restares? It doesn't sound like she's going to go along with that plan anyway, but I'm a little bit confused actually with what the Ghostbloods really want there and if they have their own mixed motives.
Yeah, I think that is a good thing to keep an eye on moving forward. Is Marais and Thaidakar completely aligned or not?
Definitely.
What about the Stormfather? My first impression, I listened to our episode from 2 years ago. We were convinced, and in fact, we talked like 45 minutes, that this was not the Stormfather. And we laid everything out and a bunch of different things. When I read this prologue again, I feel like a lot of those questions and concerns we had about this Stormfather of Izzy, the Stormfather, kind of disappeared. I don't know if that was just a weird editing thing or if he was deliberately trying to mislead us 2 years ago or what, but upon rereading this, he seems way more Stormfather-y than he did. Did you guys get the same idea?
Absolutely. I did. This sunk in as I believe that this is the real Stormfather. And the reason being is he specifies that he does not have a bond with Gavilar. I think we talked about it the last time. I also re-listened to our episode. And see, I don't remember. I'm assuming that this is a difference, that this was not in the previous version, because I don't think we would have talked about it as long if it was. The Stormfather mentions that he does not have a bond with Gavilar. And
I think it's the other way around, actually.
Okay.
Talk me through it again, maybe. What I noticed was that in the previous version, 2 years ago, there's a line where the Stormfather says, "I am not your errand boy. We have no bond." That line is gone in this new version. So there's been talk. I don't know if we talked about it then, or if it's been like side chats we've had leading up into this, about how kind of questioning, was the Stormfather bonded to Gavilar? Do we witness the Stormfather debonding Gavilar at the end of this prologue? We talked also in that previous 2 years ago episode about like font changes and how there's multiple yes. different changes in like font and what you can read into that. And there's like literally a mid sentence where the Stormfather says, "I am done with you," where it goes from italics to all caps. And I think you could point that and say, oh, that's the moment where it's no longer a voice in his head and it now becomes an audible, like overbearing Stormfather voice. So I think in the new one, that reference is gone, making me suspicious that maybe there is a bond going on here.
I could go either way on the bond thing, but I regardless of the of whether it is an official bond or not, because I that would imply that Gavilar said the first ideal, which I mean, he opens the chapter with that's not those aren't the words. So I don't know if he actually has a bond with the Stormfather or not.
I jokingly wrote in my notes that I would love to get a blooper reel of all of the times that Gavilar's just said some words to try and find the right words, try to say the right thing. Because it seems like, I mean, there's multiple times in this prologue that he throws out some quote from The Way of Kings and tries to amp it up to be the honorable moment, but the Stormfather says, those are not the words. You're not even close. This prologue was even more horribly ironic than I remembered it being, because the whole time he's like, no, the Stormfather can't tell what I think, so I'm going to act honorable, but the Stormfather's going to think I'm honorable, but I'm really not, you know? It's just all very ludicrous, you know?
Just as an aside note, we made bingo cards about 2 weeks ago, and on my card it says a Spren unbonds a Radiant. And we talked about this when I pulled it, but we've made the decision that this does not count. A, because we knew this happened when we made the card. B, we don't actually think Gavilar's an actual Knight Radiant here. So, yes, I'm aware that it's on my bingo card. No, we're not going to count it.
I have a few other questions about the Storm Faker, as he was coined 2 years ago. I'm still very not sure. This, I think I said this in my live reaction that I do in the Discord channel for our patrons. This is a confusing prologue. I've read the entire Cosmere now, and I'm still confused. There is some weird stuff going on in these chapters, and I think the Stormfather is at the center of that. Because something, I agree with what you said coming into this, Trevor, that this Stormfather feels a little bit more Stormfather-y than he did 2 years ago. And there were a lot of like general dialogue changes. I did do a little bit of a like pull the two up side by side on the screen and kind of reference back and forth. Some of the biggest changes are just general like rearranging the dialogue. It says the same thing. It's been hit by an editor and kind of, you know, condensed down and those kinds of things. It does feel more like the Stormfather to me, but he still does some weird things that we've not seen before. One, he shows up in a physical form.
Yeah.
In a way that we've not seen the Stormfather before. The Stormfather does the crazy, like, face as wide as the sky thing to Kaladin and Venli. Like, it's not that. We've never seen the Stormfather show up as a humanoid shape of fuzzy light, which is how it's described here. So why that? The other things that are suspicious for me, maybe a simple one, at the very end, the Stormfather like signs off, he closes off with saying, I will never trust a member of your family again.
Aha, yes.
Full stop. Doesn't say it like, no, I'm done with your family. Never again. And yet, we just came from the present day where he is very involved with Colin's. He's bonded to Dalinar, who's a third ideal bondsmith at this point. Fourth ideal? I don't know. Maybe even fourth by now.
I think third. I think just third.
Third.
I think so too. So that's a little suspicious in that he's either just changed his mind or, I don't know, something else is going on. But the most curious part of this all for me is a line that he spouts when he seems to feel a herald die. You remember this section? Having a conversation, and then he's described as he makes like these weird noises and then has this line where he goes, "Ah, a herald has died. No, I am not ready. The oath pact. No, they mustn't see. They mustn't know." One, why does he feel a herald die? Two, what is he worried about here? I mean, aside from obviously a desolation might be on the way here, if that's what he's worried about, but they mustn't see, they mustn't know. That sounds like the words of a faker.
Yeah.
Hence the storm faker idea.
Well, and for a long time, the prevailing theories that it was a herald trying to manipulate Gavilar, because a big point against the Stormfather being genuine is him overtly lying to Gavilar right at the top of, there are nine heralds that have all died and they're sitting back on Braes, and Tallon is the one who abandoned them and you can take Tallon's place. Okay, hold on. Everything about that is wrong. And why are we manipulating Gavilar this way? Why? You could even tell him you could take Tallon's place because Tallon's the only one not here. Like, you could create a more accurate lie if you wanted to, but he's not. So a lot of the prevailing theories are, or were, I'm not sure if they're still around or not, that this is not the Stormfather and it's actually Ishar, because he could reconstruct this vision reasonably well and then manipulate him into pulling Void Light and Anti-Void Light onto Roshar. Motive? Who knows? But I don't know. That was a theory. I could still go either way. I'm more convinced that this is the Stormfather. And another thing I've heard is that it's the Stormfather without honor. And what I mean by that is, Gavilar is not an honorable person, and the Stormfather has made a poor choice, and therefore the Stormfather is misled. I've heard that one before, and it's feasible to me.
I might be in that boat as well. That sounds like a potentially convincing argument, because we've seen before how Spren are affected by how you perceive them.
Right.
This is a Spren. A very powerful and like splinter of honor Spren, but is there still some of that Sprenness going on, where because of whatever connection he has to Gavilar throughout this period, is he taking on like the suspicious and manipulative nature of Gavilar? And then later, when we see him building a connection to Dalinar, he's feeding off of the more honorable Way of Kings driven motivations of Dalinar. That I might buy.
Closer to Noadon, Dalinar is than Gavilar.
Exactly. It's complicated. It's complex, but I might go for it.
So I definitely believe that this is the Stormfather. There are two main things that make me doubt, that put doubt in my mind that this is not the Stormfather and that this is something else. Number one is actually that Gavilar has this same vision at Ahari Etiam over and over. I don't have like Cosmere rules to back that up, but just given the experience that we have with Dalinar and any other visions, it is always something different. It's always a different vision. You never know what you're going to be dropped into. You can't just be like, hey, you know, Stormfather, I want to go to Ahari Etiam or whatever. Maybe if Dalinar progresses, maybe he will have more power to do so as a bondsmith. But I definitely don't think that Gavilar has that deliberate connection. I think he is either being misled or there's something fishy with that. I don't know if this is the Stormfather using Gavilar and kind of satiating him or what, but that is one thing that puts doubt into my mind, is the recurring same vision.
It's weird, because we'll go off the mechanics we know of Dalinar, and Gavilar obviously can't find the words, However, Dalinar, before he says the words, gets each vision in order during a high storm. They're not on demand like they are later in the books when Dalinar's second ideals. In Oathbringer, he can pull whoever he wants into whatever vision he wants. But that is post-second ideal. And before that, it's you get these visions during the high storm because I'm picking on you. You know, like that just happens to Dalinar. It's not a choice thing.
The second reason that I think that I could believe this is not the Stormfather is simply just not trusting Gavilar's point of view. Simply everything else that he points out is wrong. He doesn't believe that these are the heralds, which he does find that out. He doesn't believe in Elokar, which I would argue that over time, Elokar would have become a good leader. He doesn't believe in Dalinar, which he eventually expresses that he should have, or that Dalinar could be a good, you know, source. And probably like 10 other things, not believing in Navani. There's probably like 10 other reasons he was super misled. He was misled about becoming a herald. He's misled in every regard. He really, that's why I'm like, I think he is one of the 10 fools. I think him and Moash are two of the 10 fools, you know? And he's so misled. And literally, it was almost comical to me that everything he would mention or say is something that we know to not be right, or him to have misjudged very poorly. Like every little minutia detail is something he's off about the Barshendi. I could go on and on. So all that being said, I think just having his perspective and being like, this is the Stormfather, makes me think maybe this isn't the Stormfather, because he's wrong about everything. That right. It's kind of crazy. He's even wrong about who's trying to kill him. You know, like everything is incorrect. Which is just wild.
Did you catch the Vasher name drop, gentlemen?
Oh, yes, I did.
Let me read it. This is Gavilar's point of view in his head. He had found a way to ferry Void Spren through Shadesmar to this world using gemstones and aluminum boxes. Who would have thought that Navani's pet area of study would be so useful? And if that conniving and Exindweth eluded his grasp, he'd have to do the next part without her. He had his scholar, though in truth Gavilar was baffled by the light he was creating, light that could somehow kill the Voidbringers. How had Vasher made... He thought he heard a faint crackling sound from the Stormfather. Lightning? How cute. Okay, like 70 questions. Gavilar has Vasher working for him as an Ardent. That seems feasible. Vasher has told Gavilar his real name? He doesn't go by Vasher around here. What?
This is crazy. This is crazy. And this is one of the things that's was changed. Vasher was not in the original version of this. We would have noticed. We had read Warbreaker at that point. I guarantee we would have noticed. For exactly the reason you just said, he doesn't go by that name. He doesn't use the name Vasher. How does Gavilar even know that name? And this doesn't seem to jive. Well, it's an interesting question, actually. When I read this, I want to say this does not jive with the Zyle that I know.
Yeah.
Zyle does not seem like the scholar who experiments with light and helps the tyrants. Zyle is very much the cranky old guy who doesn't want to be bothered, but at the same time kind of has a soft heart and will probably help you. That those don't seem to align, but I hesitate perhaps because 5, 6, 7 years have gone by. Maybe there's a different Vasher 5 years ago than the one that we bump into in Wave Kings. Perhaps.
So up until this line, I thought Zyle was being genuine. He's an old grumpy guy on Roshar. He'll help you out if you really need it, but he's just hanging out. Now I think it's all up front. Now I think he's here studying anti-light. And we're 7 years behind him. Like, he specifically said he had his scholar, though in truth Gavilar had baffled by the light he was creating.
Yeah.
Vasher is maybe the main brains behind getting anti-light on Roshar, which is crazy. Is he trying to replicate Nightblood or something like that?
This changes everything. If it's true, if you're going down that path, because like I said, I was very four books in. I was very convinced that Zile is the helpful, wise old guy who I was not suspicious of him one bit. And granted, the Vasher from Nalthus, not necessarily the guy of highest repute, although there's way worse out there. You know, do I trust necessarily the Vasher from Nalthus? Not completely, but Zile on Roshar has not given me any reason to not trust him. So if all of a sudden he's been working with Gavilar this whole time and he's out for himself and still trying to be a major player on the big scale of things, that's completely different. Do you want to... I'm going to add to this and read something from Rhythm of War. You ready for it?
Heck yeah.
Okay. There's a chapter in Rhythm of War that is kind of blowing my mind now that I'm going back and rereading some things. Chapter 77 from Rhythm of War. It's not an interlude. It's not the prologue, but it's a flashback to that night. There's a couple of these in Rhythm of War that are kind of snuck in there where it's just a random chapter in the middle, but then all of a sudden you're back at this night of the prologue. Venli, this is a Venli point of view. This is Venli's view of the prologue and those events. She is like sneaking through Kolinar with her void spren Ulim.
The back staircase. Remember? Scene?
Yes.
Yeah.
And okay. They end up, this chapter is crazy in its of itself because they end up bumping into Nail, and you realize that Nail was like the original impetus behind getting Zeth to work for the listeners, the Parshendi, who then have him assassinate Gavilar, which is crazy because that just happened like right after the scene we just read now in this prologue where Nail meets Gavilar, realizes what he's up to, says that, oh, I have to work for you because you are the law, walks out of the room and goes and hires Venli to go hire Zeth to go work for Eshinai to go assassinate Gavilar.
Yes.
In that scene, Venli and Ulim are just kind of sneaking through the palace. And they like go up to, it's like a pot on a table. And they pull a note out of it. And this is what Ulim says the note says. Zindweth says she's been discovered. She's a very specific and rare kind of specialist. The details need not concern you. But there's apparently another of her kind in the palace, an agent for someone else. They found her and turned the human king against her. She's decided to pull out. Pull out? I don't understand that phrasing. She's leaving, or left, perhaps days ago. Left the palace? Left the planet, you idiot. In this prologue here, Gavilar is saying, oh, Zindweth is gone, but it's fine. I still have my other person, Vasher. Is that the other agent that is being referenced in this note from Zindweth? Did Vasher drive Zindweth away just as another world hopper / agent of something going on here? Is that a reference to this back in Rhythm of War?
I think it has to be.
Might be.
That seems too akin.
Seems
that was a sneaky find.
Either one or two things is going on here. Gavilar has a different agent, scholar person, and Vasher is like somehow mixed up in the middle of it, but isn't actually the agent. Or Vasher is up to way more than we think he is.
Yeah.
One of those two.
I'm just going to go ahead and throw my chips in the basket. I think that Vasher is up to more than we've been led to believe this whole time. We get early on in our story, we get the grumpy old swordmaster. But I'm basing this mostly off of he comes back into the fray of the story for a moment in Rhythm of War. And I didn't remember this reference that you had. And, you know, we are, I would say, still speculating that that is who we're connecting. Like the chapter 77 that you read and this prologue mentioning Vasher. Vasher is coming up. And we have seen Zile back in Rhythm of War again. So that just makes me feel like he's going to still hold relevance, that he wasn't just going to be grumpy swordmaster and who we're going to leave in book two or wherever we last saw him. He may have been an Oathbringer as well. I don't remember off the top of my head. But I don't think we're going to just leave him back there. I think it may not be something like groundbreaking that like he's going to lead the charge and he's going to unlock all the lights for all of us. But I think we might get some sneaky confirmations along the way. Maybe we'll get a Vasher interlude or something like that where we see more. But I think this is definitely legit. I think you're hot on the trail, even though it may not be answered right away. Maybe I'm blowing it up too big.
I would feel way better about this if Gavilar called him Zile. It would make way more sense to me.
Yes.
Way more sense to me.
Yes.
If Gavilar used the word Zile, but instead he uses Vasher. And now I'm completely questioning Vasher's motives on the planet.
Trevor, do you think that you asked us if the Sion, the Thadakar, or what was it? You asked us at the start of this episode if we think Elantris is a prerequisite. Do we think that Warbreaker is now a prerequisite to this book? You know, if you're mentioning Vasher, we've gotten name drops that we didn't know about before, and that's fine. But that's pretty deliberate. If he said Zile, then that's your crossover both ways. People can read this on their own. They know who Zile is already. And Cosmere readers know that this is Zile is Vasher. But switching that up, if you haven't read Warbreaker, then Vasher is a new person, a completely new name that you don't know.
I don't think Warbreaker is a prerequisite, but it's getting awful close. there's stuff in this prologue that we don't even understand, and we're still getting plenty out of it. So it's one of those things where if you know, you know. If you don't, okay. But I think Nightblood's more of a Stormlight character now instead of a Warbreaker character anyway. So I don't think Warbreaker's really a prerequisite yet.
That's fair. I also want to chime in just to say, lastly, on that topic of like, oh, is this X, Y, or Z a prerequisite thing? The prologue, and I imagine the interludes, are a stomping ground where Brandon gets to have maybe a little more fun with references, name drops, and all sorts of kooky stuff, because it's not like in the middle of the prevailing story. And so even if he dropped crazier stuff than that, I feel like I'd still be hesitant to say, you know, this is a prerequisite, you need to know what this is, unless it became more of a front running part of our actual current day story.
One more thing I want to touch on the prologue. The very last couple of lines of the prologue. Let me read them. Hand quivering, he pulled a sphere out of his pocket. The weapon. They needed this. His son. No, his son could not handle such a power. They needed a warrior, a true warrior. One that Gavilar had been doing his best to suppress, out of a fear he barely dared acknowledge, even as he drew his last ragged breaths. Dalinar. Storms helped them, it came down to Dalinar. He held the sphere out towards the Storm Father, his vision fuzzing, thinking was difficult. You must take this. They must not get it. Tell my brother he must find the most important words a man can say. The detail I wanted to highlight there is he's obviously seeing stuff. He's about to die. He thinks he's giving this sphere to the Storm Father, not Zeth. Zeth is the one who grabs it from him and says, yeah, all right, whatever, and writes the words on the plank or whatever and then runs off. Gavilar thinks he's handing it to the Storm Father and not to Zeth, which makes me wonder even more why Gavilar would even think that the Storm Father could grab that. Like, Dalinar would never even consider handing the Storm Father something. Like, I don't know. I'm still wishy-washy on mechanics here for Gavilar point of view. Maybe Gavilar's just, you know, crazy or something.
I'm still stuck on that scene too. I think I mentioned this 2 years ago and it's still in there now. In that same moment where Gavilar's kind of losing it, right? Because he's dying. You're right, tries to give the sphere to the Storm Father. He also says something that's one of the more suspicious bits of it for me, because he says, you can tell Thaidakar that he's too late. That's like the first thing that Gavilar says as Zeth is walking up to him as he's dying. The Storm Father then appears and says, I did not cause this. And when I read this 2 years ago, that fueled my theory that this Stormfather faker was actually Thaidakar. I don't know, based on what I know about Thaidakar now, if that's actually my theory, but it's still really weird that Gavilar says, tell Thaidakar that he's too late. Zeth says something, and then the Stormfather says, I did not cause this. There's one more bit of the prologue that I wanted to point out to you guys. And that is further back when Gavilar is talking to Taravangian. So there's a section in here where Taravangian shows up with Amaram as a new recruit to the Sons of Honor. And they have a chat. Gavilar's like, oh, I thought you were a simpleton and clearly you know more about what's going on. I'll have to take you seriously. And Taravangian is like, kind of surprised by how much Gavilar knows. Taravangian clearly already knows quite a bit, and they talk about a death rattle. Do you guys remember this part?
Yeah. Taravangian's what, mother or grandmother?
Yes. Taravangian says, 10 years ago, my mother died of her tumors. She gazed at me in her last moments, and she whispered, I stand before him above the world itself, and he speaks the truth. The desolation is near, the Everstorm, the night of sorrows. We know about the desolation. We know about the Everstorm, night of sorrows, I think. But there's a word in there that stood out to me now that would never have stood out to me 2 years ago, because now I know the title of this book. The death rattle says, I stand before him above the world itself, and he speaks the truth. Could be very simple, could be any truth. But the title of our book is Wind and Truth. I wonder if that truth is going to be something we need to keep an eye out for. That's my last thought on the prologue.
I have one question on the prologue. Parallel-ish to what you're talking about, Elliot. This is largely a refresh. Like I said, been a minute since we've been in main series Stormlight Archive. Just a couple things. Like, I had to remember that Kalak, Restaris is Kalak. Just random things like that. The Sons of Honor. This is the group that Restaris and Nail, who's here, Amaram, these people are in, and he's brought his new recruits, including Taravangian, to be recruited into the Sons of Honor. First, as an aside, if this was the first, let's say hypothetically this was the first prologue that you saw, or this is like where you're being introduced to a lot of these characters, You'd be like, this Sons of Honor thing is awesome. Like, they, I feel like they are doing good stuff, but we know a lot of these characters. Amaram and our heralds are a bit sketch. So is Teravantian, right? Like they're not my heroes of our story, that's for sure. I wanted to get a refresh. What is the motive of the Sons of Honor, and what are they doing?
So the Sons of Honor is founded by Rhistaris, I believe, and with Gavilar. And the whole premise is we need to bring about the returning of the Everstorm so that the Knights Radiant come back and we can be radiant. That they're trying to force a desolation to happen so that they can be Knights Radiant again, is what the Sons of Honor do.
Gotcha. The reason why I was saying you could kind of get behind their cause if you're looking at it through a narrow lens is because Kalak here makes several mentions. So Gavilar is like the ends justify the means side with this goal that's already not a great goal, in my opinion, of like faking it, faking honor, faking these things to try and provoke the Radiance to come back and all these things to happen. Kalak does make some mentions of like essentially needing to bring the honor or the good aspects of the Knight Radiance back, which was why what prompted this thought that I brought up to begin with, that I just thought was kind of interesting. And it almost, to me, almost gives the glimmer of hope of like, almost like the glint of our heralds who are really messed up right now were once, you know, pretty cool guys, I imagine. But with that, I didn't have any other thoughts on the prologue. It was so dense. There was like every moment felt like something to really think about, kind of contemplate. But and honestly, like I mentioned, a lot of refresh for me. I've had to kind of make sure I've got all my characters straight, all my players in order, getting back into the groove. Picking up in chapter one, it felt more like, okay, this is what I know. I can roll with this.
More bite-sized. However,
there are things that I did not know that we'll talk about. But yeah, it felt more like, okay, I know what we're talking about. I know who we're dealing with. We got this. The prologue was a bit all over.
Okay. Past the prologue, chapter one. And before we even get to chapter one, did you guys notice the title page or the part insert? There is no part one. It begins with day one.
Yeah.
This is not part one of Wind and Truth, or at least if the title page is there, it's been omitted. It starts with day one, Kaladin and Shallan. We get an art piece that we've actually seen before, and then we get to chapter one. Any of that before we read our epigraph?
I do have thoughts on the epigraph, which we'll come back to. But I guess I didn't tune into this. I did see that it said day one, but I didn't tune in that was in place of part one. I think I've compartmentalized this as like, this isn't the actual physical book in my hand, so it's whatever is sitting up front, you know? But I, now that you mentioned that, I guess that is the case. We're not going to have part one, but we're going to have day one. And they do have it in a daytime, you know, day countdown structure. Kaladin mentions what, like 9 days, 10 days until the Contest of Champions.
Yep.
So we might get an Emperor's Soul style to part of our book here, where we might get that where we have day one, day two, day three onward, and then going back to the Way of Kings after the Contest of Champions, we might have 10 days post death or something like that. You know, we might pick up into something like that. If you remember those epigraphs.
I do. As far as I know, I don't know this 100%, but the part one page was there for the Rhythm of War pre-releases, and it is not for here. So do with that what you will. This art piece we have seen before in Rhythm of War. It is of the Star Spren that Adolin and Shallan go sketch, but there's something added. You guys notice anything weird about this art?
Oh man, I skimmed right past this art as, oh okay, more sketches of Spren, moving on. Now you're going to me there's something I was supposed to notice here?
She's staring right at you.
It just looks like... So you said this is a Star Spren?
Yes, this is the Star Spren from Rhythm of War. But there's something included in the picture.
Like the face?
Yes, the creepy face in the bottom right.
This Star Spren, I thought, almost looks like how I imagined Cheery Cheery to look. I thought that's maybe what we were getting at. But I also glossed right past this picture and the day one thing. Skipped it entirely. I didn't even realize it until you bring this up. But yeah, scary face.
Creepy lady. Any thoughts?
You think that's... this is that face, by the way, this is probably not accurate, but that's how I envisioned... Was it ELA? Looking end of Oathbringer, all corrupted and evil queen status. That's not ELA, is it?
That's Gavinor's mother. I don't remember her name.
Acidon? Was it Acidon?
Well, look at you. Good job.
Woohoo. Did it. I don't know where ELA is, Sadius' wife. I don't know why I thought it was her. Anyways, that's the evil, almost like an evil queen energy. I don't know. Y'all think that's by, you know, Mishram or something?
I know the answer to this. For reference, I've read through chapter 32 of this book, and I'm not reading any further. I actually know the answer to this, so I'm not going to pretend I don't.
Okay. So sounds like I'm right. It's Ba'edo Mishrim.
I'm getting like almost Rabonial vibes from this view of this being potentially a singer, but I don't know. It's going to be a lot of things. Definitely wearing a crown and not looking too happy.
True. On the preview chapter podcast with Tim and David, we sat here counting how many spires in her crown there are and trying to figure. Yeah.
I was going to say, great observation, Trevor. Now let's talk about Kaladin. You know, Actually, can I talk about the epigraph, or do we have more to say? Because
go ahead and read the epigraph if you want.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. It says, chapter one, unfamiliar ground. I should have known I was being watched. All my life, the signs were there. From Knights of Wind and Truth, page one. Okay. Instantly. Okay. Instantly, I was thinking about who... We had this conversation briefly. Who is going to write the in-world Wind and Truth, or Knights of Wind and Truth, is, I'm assuming, the in-world book.
Yep.
I was trying to think, who has been watched all their life? Who is this? And you could make a case for many characters. I could see, honestly, throw out a name, and you could probably make a case for it. I was trying to think of who this might be, and I think that Shallan is going to write the in-world Wind and Truth.
Okay.
This is not Shallan's book. Neither was last book or the book before, but we've gotten a lot about Shallan. She's obviously one of our most primary characters. And the reason for this is I think we will get a couple nods back to her past that will showcase more. We talk about it in this chapter that she has two bonded Spren. She bonded one as a child and then one pattern later on in life. There's the whole theory about Chenerach is Shallan's mother, right? Nope. There's a lot going back to her childhood and early days that lead me to believe that she may be the one who has been watched her whole, all my life. The signs were there, and she's going to look back. I also wrote down that this could be Rissen. But I think that's less possible, but I'm like, Dawn Shard, maybe she's going to have some transcendental moments and be like, the signs have been here all my life, X, Y, Z are things, you know, all these reasons. I'm also thinking this could be Zeth, because we're going to get flashbacks to his childhood. Really, no idea, but if I had to stake my flag in the ground, chapter one, before even reading the chapter, my prediction is that Shallan is writing Knights of Wind and Truth.
Elliot, any predictions?
I think Knights of Wind and Truth is going to be written by someone we don't know, or one of our more ancient figures. I think we're going to go back to this being a like ancient text. That this will not be something written in the modern day, which is a problem because on my bingo board is a book gets published. So I think I'm predicting that I will not be checking that box, that this book is going to have been published a very long time ago. It feels like not Noadon, as much as I'd love it to be Noadon, because we're trying to follow that dude and figure out what he's up to. But he already published a book, so unless this is the sequel to Way of Kings, which maybe it could be, I'm thinking this is going to be someone new from the old times, or like one of our heralds, perhaps, and their, you know, old pre-herald days or something along those lines.
I think you could also go a bit more extreme, like some of our extreme characters. I think, given a little bit of the hints we got in the prologue, I feel like you could argue that this could be some more large scale being. This could be Ba'edo Mishram. This could be, I had the thought just earlier, maybe more seriously than that prediction, that this could be one of our Parshmen. I feel like our Parshmen have always, like, you know, they're not Parshmen right now, but essentially the Parshmen as we knew them without form and things like that, always kind of been watched by the people, right? Kind of enslaved, kind of under the noses of the Alethi their whole lives, you know, at least as much as I can remember in recent history, right? So I feel like there's a solid case for that. It's all conjecture right now, but there's a lot of avenues I think you could go. I do think it's probably someone modern. I think it's going to be somebody that we know, because I think there's going to be maybe more emotional attachment. This is going meta, like thinking in the, you know, I think it's going to be someone we know, that way we have a little more emotional attachment to these epigraphs that I assume we will continue to get.
At the time of reading this, I was shooting straight down the barrel and said this was Kaladin. I thought this was Kaladin dictating a book at the end of the book.
Was that a prediction or a wish list prediction?
Both.
Yeah. There we go.
All right. Chapter one, we get a split Kaladin and Shallan chapter. They're not up to much, but there's a little bit in here. What'd you guys get?
Well, Kaladin felt good.
Kaladin felt good. Period.
Kaladin felt good.
Period. End of the book.
Yeah, which I was not expecting that to be our opening line. I feel like a lot of his story has been not feeling good. Maybe doing what's good while not feeling good, you know? Right.
Well, that's what makes it have a nice punch, is Kaladin finally felt good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice. And we get, so the jumping into the beginning of this chapter, the Kaladin half of this chapter, he's talking a bit about the upcoming Contest of Champions, but what I want to ask y'all about or talk about is, so he's talking with Syl. We get some good old-fashioned Syl-Kaladin banter, which we haven't had in a while. I missed it. I absolutely love it. But I want to point out Syl's development. So, okay. Way of Kings, she wobbles onto the scene, an unknowing little windspren that can't remember anything, yada yada. They develop a bond, a Nile bond. She continues to develop in various pivotal moments. She's like full size, and there's these dramatic moments, the moments we love. She grows more and more and more sentient, more and more intelligent, everything, right? She just develops, grows. Here, this may be me overreacting, exaggerating, reading it too into it, but it feels like we're still getting development steps. I feel like we hit a point either in Words of Radiance or Oathbringer or sometime along there that in my head, Syl is fully developed, that she is able to do all the possible spren things that she can. But here she's kind of joking about fluctuating her size all the time, coloring her clothes different, which was new to me and what raised the alarm. I feel like Syl is continuing to grow further. I don't know what that means or if that really changes anything, but I wanted to know if there's anything y'all thought about this, the bond between Kaladin and Syl. Has she always been able to do that? Or am I just picking something out of nothing, trying to read into this one chapter too much? Or is there something legitimate going on here?
Before she changed her size based on how dramatic she wanted to be for the scene, when Kaladin was going to run back for Dalinar at the bridge, she was full size. When she's falling through the rain, she's full size. Anytime there's an ideal about to happen, she's full size. Now it's like, I don't know, it feels right. That's what she says. So
it does feel right. I think I'm more so tuning into the color aspect, that she's playing with the color and shifting like the clothes she's wearing. Because doesn't it mention that she almost has like an Alethi style dress on or something of that nature, like more stylized clothes? I'm sure all the people who have tried to ship the romantic relationship between Kaladin and Sylphrena were having a hoot with this half a chapter. But more so the clothing and like changing her color and stuff like that made me feel like she is still gaining more sentience, I guess, more strength.
More personhood.
Yeah, more personhood.
She's also very much back to her happy-go-lucky. Doesn't quite do it justice, because I think there is a more mature aspect to her character now. But she's very lighthearted. She's very girlish in these chapters where she's just rambling on silly stuff and apparently trying to use her highbrow comedy on Kaladin by having a tentacle pop out of her forehead and slap Kaladin. Those kinds of things.
Wonderful.
Those kinds of things, like the silliness of that actually really encourages me and makes me feel good about where Syl is. Because if you remember back in Rhythm of War, there were some moments where Syl got like dark. We had like dark Syl. I don't know if you remember those.
Yeah.
Where she was like feeding off of some of Kaladin's more depressed side and saying things that were they shocked us, because we're like, oh my gosh, this is Syl saying dark things about the end of the world and people dying and what is going on. This is the happy Syl. This is back to the very excited, says silly things, keeps Kaladin on his positive side, that version of Syl.
Do you imagine that we're seeing this because I imagine it's key to also point out that Syl is doing well is likely an effect of Kaladin doing well. It's usually pretty directly correlated that their bond is dependent on his state, his status.
Definitely.
And we open up and see a Kaladin, one that felt good, which is maybe abnormal, but great and very welcome. But two, a Kaladin that knows the Contest of Champions, this doomsday event is happening, and he is content to not be a part of it. Which is something that an attitude that I was not expecting. It's been a while since I've read Rhythm of War, but even though he was let go and there was the whole fiasco with that and him kind of learning to accept that, we see he's perfectly content with it. And that is a very healthy place to be. But I imagine that's pretty directly correlated to Syl now being in the state she's in, really healthy. But yeah, very, very interesting, very kind of development, interesting development from Kaladin, which I thought was pretty fascinating to open up to.
It is interesting that you point that out, because that was one of the things, or one of the things I noticed in this chapter, though, was he does seem in a good place about it. He seems positive and that he's not going to be part of the combat. He's accepting that. But did you notice what he's wearing?
He is wearing his uniform because it felt right.
Exactly. He's still wearing his uniform because it feels right. That I actually keyed into, maybe more than I should have. I could see it going the path of like, he still has very much like the discipline of a soldier, but is choosing the path of the surgeon instead. But another part of me is really wondering, like, is he truly going to be able to embrace the peaceful life when part of him is maybe drawn back to the old days of Bridge 4 and the rushing into battle to save the people that cannot protect themselves? You know, those moments, can Kaladin really get away from that? I don't know.
Do you think this is the closest we will get to the happy Kaladin on his farm living happily ever after?
I hope we get closer to that than now. We're decently close there. I hope we see Kaladin retire to a country farm and Syl can help him milk the cows.
But the last part of the Kaladin side of the chapter, gentlemen, let me read it. Kaladin. He jumped, then glanced at Syl, who was walking through the room in a half dance, half stride, her eyes closed, as if moving to an inaudible beat. Syl, Kaladin said, did you say my name? Huh? She said, opening her eyes. Kaladin. Storms, there it was again. I need your help. I'm so sorry to ask more of you. Tell me you hear that, Kaladin said to Syl. I feel, she cocked her head, I feel something on the wind. It's speaking to me, he said, one hand to his head. A storm is coming, Kaladin, the wind whispered. The worst storm. I'm sorry. It was gone. What did you hear? Syl asked. A warning, he said, frowning. Syl, is the wind alive? Everything is alive. He gazed outward, waiting for the voice to return. It didn't. Just to that crisp breeze, though now it didn't seem calm. Now it seemed to be waiting for something. A little point in Paul's bingo board favor that I saw a smirk from Paul there.
Yes, exactly. This could be hinted that this might be a third storm. Is that what you're referring to, Trevor?
Yes. There's a storm coming.
A new storm is coming could mean a third storm, which would be awesome. That's a corner piece. I'll take that for my bingo board if that comes to fruition.
Whoa. This could easily be a metaphor here, gentlemen. I do wonder if there's another literal storm headed our way, but it could also just be, I mean, we've seen the theme of storm revolve around Kaladin this entire way, right? This is very much on brand for Kaladin. Kaladin's storm blessed. The worst storm is coming. That could be a lot of things.
And I do agree with you. However, I will take these sorts of hints because it gives me hope for my bingo board. So I'm going to take what I can get with a smile on my face and move onward. But who's Trevor, talking? Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Who is talking? Is this Honor? Son of Honor? Son of Tanavast?
Tanavast? Is he hearing things?
Well, you know, I've got something on my bingo board. Tien speaks dialogue.
Okay.
Just saying.
Okay. Any other guesses?
I was going to say the exact same thing. I have a feeling that this could be cultivation. However, the only thing, which this may be a big thing that we have to reread to find of the phrasing of this. Hold on, let me find. I just had the chapter pulled up. I need your help. I'm so sorry to ask more of you. I had the thought of who has been asking Kaladin for things already. I could see this as a couple things. Okay. First, so he is hearing this voice in his head. Is this possible that this is Dalinar using connection to send a message to Kaladin? Can Dalinar do that?
Yes. But why wouldn't he just go talk to him?
Well, I mean, he's probably got his hands full. It'd be way easier, you know, to get that.
Call him.
Hey, yeah, call him. You know, cell phones. However, I imagine if that were the case, unless it's some weird thing where he's communicating via the Stormfather and not his voice, I'm like, Kaladin would know Dalinar's voice. I feel like that would be expressed to us. I don't think it's actually Dalinar. I think it's either, man, it's crazy to say. I think it's either honor or cultivation.
Okay. Anything else in the Kaladin chapter? Or in the Kaladin segment. We get a very brief Shallan segment, but it's nice. We get to reconnect with Shallan and Adolin in Lasting Integrity, and Testament actually takes a center stage in this section. What'd you guys take from this?
So for me, the big takeaway is that Shallan has two Spren. She's bonded to Spren. This is the question that we talked about quite a bit. The implications of if you could bond to Spren when we were looking at Sunlit Man with Sigzil, right? The timeline, trying to figure out the timeline. If you can't bond to Spren, how does the timeline work to get two different Spren? But sounds like you can bond to Spren. You just can do that. I have questions. So it does say that these Spren are both cryptics, right? Her original Spren, the cryptic, sat with her back to the stone railing. So we have two cryptics, two light weavers weaving Spren. Does having two, if hypothetically, if you have two active Spren bonded, does that improve your capability, like your
double light weaver?
You double light weave? Do you get double the? Do you get a more efficient stormlight per mile, like use of investiture, or less efficient? You know what? I need a little more on the mechanics here.
So they talk in this chapter about how she's somehow still like a little bit bonded to Testament, because Shallan comes up with the idea of like, oh, if I could bond her again, would it heal her? And Pattern basically says, well, Kellick doesn't think so. He thinks you're still bonded to her, and that when you severed your bond, it was more like a tear as opposed to a cut. And you have like this ragged connection still to Testament. So you can't recreate it because it's still there. It's just broken.
Pattern uses the capital word intent. When you were young, you didn't have the capital intent.
Yeah.
So the break is ragged. So interesting idea there.
So I'm curious to know if the only reason Shallan could bond Pattern is because she only had a very weak bond with Testament. Like, can you have two full Spren at full bond and get access to crazy powers and stuff like that? I'm not so sure this is right, or be like dual path to orders of radiant, you know, kinds of questions. I'm not, I think, going to jump to the conclusion that this is evidence of that just yet. Can you have like a bond of some kind with Tuspren? Apparently, yes. But I wonder if like a strong, healthy bond with Testament would detract from a bond with Pattern.
Good question. I actually don't know the answer. As we get closer to my reading block, I'm going to know less and less. Know things that you don't, less and less.
Yeah. Well, Shallan does finish the chapter one out by saying, I'm going to figure this out. So I hope she does. I hope she does, and I hope she tells us all about it.
It's a very positive segment, actually, from Shallan, because there's that, you know, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to help you. There's definitely a little C connection going on there between Shallan and Testament. And Pattern weighs into the sentimentality too, when he kind of at the beginning of this discussion tells Shallan that Shallan's like really torn up about Testament. And it's like, oh, Testament should just absolutely hate me. And it doesn't seem like that's the case. Why? And Pattern says, because the sacrifice was worth something, Shallan. And this was almost another cool callback to Shallan's inspiration of she is worth it. The Cosmere is better because you're in it, is I think something that Hoid said to her at one point. And this is almost like an echo of that.
Talking about Vin?
No. There's a...
Or the girl who stood up.
Yes.
Okay.
That one. Yeah.
Because Vin has a similar thing, but...
I think you're right. I think you're right. But there is a Hoid therapy session where he tells Shallan, the world is better because of you. Because you're in it. And this is...
You are not worse for your association with the world, but it is better for its association with you. It's on my board.
Yeah, there you go. And this is a little bit of some of that from Pattern, where he says, you know, yes, Testament is in a bad place, but we made that sacrifice for you. And I don't think he says this specifically, but I get very much the feeling of like, we don't regret it.
Yeah. Well, and if you're reading this back to back from Rhythm of War, this is coming right off the back of Maya's speech of We Chose.
Yeah.
So exactly. the whole idea of Spren can make these decisions for themselves.
And did we talk about the dog and the dragon? We didn't, did we?
Like Kaladin felt warm or something?
Yeah, exactly. In this theme of this was a very positive like chapter one. Shallan is kind of on the upswing. She's going to try and do what she can for Testament. Pattern is saying, you know, we made this sacrifice for you. Kaladin is having a good day. We talked about that too. And there was a really like almost emotional line from Kaladin. If you take a second to think about it, where he says, let me read it. It does feel warm to have finally figured a few things out. To let go of the weight and step out from the shadow. I know darkness will return, but I think I'll be able to remember better than before. Remember what? That's so. That days like this exist too. And if you're coming to this 2 years after having read Rhythm of War, it'd be easy to forget what just happened with Kaladin not that long ago with the dog and the dragon encounter with Wit, where he tells him, it's going to get worse, but it's going to get better and you will be warm again. And that's like leads straight into what Kaladin is saying here. So apparently he successfully internalized what Wit was able to encourage him with in that story, which I thought was really heartwarming for me.
Glad you pointed it out. Anything else, gentlemen?
Nothing. Major, just want to say I'm so glad to be back reading Stormlight 5. It feels like we'd never have gotten here, but somehow here we are. So slowly but surely we'll make our way through this book and have all of our questions answered.
I'm feeling good. Let's go. I'm excited for this book. Having gone and read some other series that Brandon has written to conclusion, I can tell you that his final books in a series tend to be pretty epic. And so this might be dangerous. My hopes are high for what we are about to read, but I have a lot of confidence in Brandon based on the 19 other books of his that we've read at this point. So win in truth. Let's do it.
I'm also quite excited. Let's reconvene next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
So we begin.
See you next week.